Welcome to the World Bank EdTech Podcast, a conversation on the use of technology and innovation in education globally. My name is Bob Hawkins. I'm the Global Lead for Technology and Innovation in Education at the World Bank. We are very pleased to have with us today a partner and friend, Siraj Shah, who is the Lead for Strategic Partnerships at the Center for Innovative Teaching and Learning at the MasterCard Foundation. Welcome, Siraj. It's fantastic to have you on our podcast today.
Thank you, Bob. It's a pleasure to be here and looking forward to discussing this further.
Thanks. So today's discussion, we want to explore some of the challenges and opportunities both of our respective organizations see in Africa with regard to technology and innovation and education, and how we are partnering to address those challenges. I wonder if we can kick off the conversation, Siraj, with you maybe sharing a little bit for our listeners about what is the Center for Innovative Teaching and Learning, and maybe some of the broader objectives of the MasterCard Foundation.
Sure. Bob, let me start with the MasterCard Foundation, because you know that's the bigger entity and then the center fits into the strategy. So the MasterCard Foundation was born in 2006 through the generosity of MasterCard. We've been working in Africa as well as in Canada over various different projects. The most notable one since then has been the Scholars Program, full scholarships to young deserving Africans to pursue studying at universities and institutions of higher education. In 2018, the board members and the executive committee of the MasterCard Foundation decided that it was time to kind of come up with a more cohesive strategy in which we can fit all our various programs towards a certain goal. So they realized that by 2030, Africa will have 65% of the world's youth. So how about creating an initiative and an overall strategy that will help youth get the right skills and kind of empower to get into a meaningful and fulfilling employment? So the Young Africa Work Strategy was born with a goal of enabling 30 million young Africans, 70% of whom we want to target women, into finding meaningful and fulfilling work. And so with this strategy, we're working in 7 countries in Africa with, you know, expanded footprints outside of the 7 countries on looking at various economic sectors on where can we help youth kind of get better skills to find some sort of fulfilling employment. One of the things we've looked at is the education systems across Africa. Too often the education systems, especially around secondary education systems, haven't evolved to give young people those skills needed that can help them sustain themselves after leaving school. If you look at the average transition rates across Africa, and depending on the kind of, you know, research or statistic you see, it's anything between 9 and 11% of learners transition between secondary school to any form of tertiary education in Africa. So if we don't bolster those pedagogy systems to make sure that young learners get the right relevant quality education, I think we'll be doing everyone a disservice. So the Center for Innovative Teaching and Learning was created to create the relevance and quality of education, but using technology as a central pillar to do that. We're looking at the gaps that the government see in education outcomes in various countries, and then seeking out that what kind of local built, developed education technology helps us bridge those gaps. We're creating these edtech ecosystems where we have some seriously good innovative solutions that break down barriers of access that we can bring together. So we support them to grow their businesses through fellowships that we have. And the government gets involved in sort of, you know, understanding the impact and therefore with a future aim that they will provide the much needed demand for these locally driven edtech solutions. We're also looking at how do we make sure that the policies and regulatory frameworks in those countries are also conducive for the local businesses to grow? So that's been our sort of idea around, you know, the Center for Innovative Teaching and Learning. The other thing we do is also making sure that we demystify, we talk to policymakers, we talk to educators, we talk to users of education technology like parents, young people, teachers, what it takes, what is a policy around certain aspects of education technology, what are the gains we've seen, how do we inform policymakers of what are the barriers and how can they kind of, you know, review policies, but also what is the experience of young learners and using various aspects of technology for advancing either access to education. So that we have our EdTech Mondays, which runs across Africa in 6 countries, as well as an Africa version in English and a Francophone West Africa bringing all of this together. But Bob, you and I come together around improving resilience in education systems. Of course, COVID hastened the fact that governments, ministries of education, A, need to ensure that learning continues when formal education institutions are closed for whatever reason. We saw that in the pandemic where students had to be sent home. In a lot of parts of Africa, the governments themselves didn't know where these students were or what kind of access to technology they had. A lot of them brought about learning through radio lessons and through TV lessons, but was that enough? And with this, they came to us in the last ministerial forum, Kigali, to say we need to create more resilient education systems. And if that means creating a more hybrid model of learning, so be it. Now, hybrid models of learning is a much deeper process. But again, the governments want some support in thinking this through. What is the kind of that policy and strategy around it? What is the kind of resource planning around it? So that's why we had this partnership with the World Bank that is enabling 12, 13 countries across Africa, and we're hoping to bring more countries, think this through and take the steps to kind of mainstreaming hybrid models of learning.
Thanks, Siraj. I think that the partnership's been so instrumental because we are hearing many of the same challenges and seeing many of the same challenges in Africa, particularly the issue of the demographic dividend, the demographic challenge that you mentioned on the number of youth that are entering the system and that will need to be employed between now and 2050. I think what's interesting about this partnership is the different levels that we're working at, starting with the youth themselves and a focus on what are the challenges for not only educating youth, but also educating them with the appropriate skills for the future. And I think COVID, as you rightly point out, was an inflection point for EdTech, that countries around the world, and particularly in Africa, saw the challenges of service delivery when schools are not accessible. And I think a lot of the countries that were able to adapt and succeed in reaching students during COVID had some level of technology investment, as you point out, whether it was radio, television, and being able to kind of leverage those investments to combine delivery modalities, combining TV with radio, with mobile, with internet, including some feedback loops back to teachers, where some of the models worked more successfully than others. But ultimately, I think what ministries identified, one, as you point out, was the need for more resilient systems. Two, the importance of engaging with a broader ecosystem of partners, that they cannot do this alone. And there are a number of excellent examples of how those partnerships took place. And then three, an opportunity to take a fresh look at their EdTech strategy, many of which were written in 2016 or earlier and hadn't been renewed. So I think it's been very exciting that that our partnership have kind of shared these two pillars of one, looking at what are the skills that youth need to be successful in an ever-changing and uncertain future, and what are the types of policies and systems that need to be put in place to ensure that education is resilient and can adapt to future shocks, as well as the shocks that happen every day with regard to girls' access to school, for instance. So being able to work at both the policy level as well as the implementation level, I think has been very, very interesting and rewarding. We kicked off our partnership just about a year ago with a policy academy that brought together 12 countries from across Africa to begin to review their existing policies, their strategies, and their action plans to develop new policies for how to leverage technology to improve teaching and learning, and specifically development of relevant skills and resilience. I wonder if you can reflect a little bit, now that it's been a year, on this journey that we've taken, at least on the policy level, of those countries that participated in the Policy Academy, and then a number of the countries that we've worked intensively with other partners such as UNESCO and UNICEF and FCDO to develop policies and renew policies.
Absolutely. So Bob, policies normally, you know, are a lot more sort of government intensive processes. So I was not only surprised, but also very, very inspired with the energy with which the 12 countries, and we did the Sahel region as almost like a 13th country.
Yeah, exactly. There are four additional countries in the Sahel. So yeah, let's call it 13.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So each and every country team took on the challenge posed to them during the Policy Academy. Were subscribed or rather were actually leading to say, we do actually want to look into how can we kind of create more resilient education systems. And each country took its own context of what they understood by resilient or hybrid models of learning, where they would start focusing on initially, because it's not as easy as saying, we will go hybrid from X date and you switch it on and it works. No, first of all, you have to think through a strategy. And the most important is they all started thinking about what is that North Star? If we do this, what is it that we're going to drive for in 5, 6 or you know, a finite number of years? And kind of work towards that goal and then break it down into the strategy. What will need to be worked on? Policy, of course, is always number one. But it's also looking at where are we at with teacher professional development, teacher digital skills, learners' digital skills. Where are we at with access to infrastructure, you know, the internet connectivity and device connection? Are we all going to wait till the entire country is connected to the internet, every school is connected to the internet, every child has a device? Or are there ways to sort of stagger this and start now rather than wait till that happens? So each country looked at it in a different way. Each country like came up with some amazing, every single one of them, the strategies were fantastic. We learned a lot ourselves, and I suppose, you know, even yourselves at World Bank, on the depth at which this wasn't a new thing presented to them. Is it something that they were already thinking through, they were conscious of, but just this gives them that ability to share best known practices, learn from what everybody else is doing, and some picking on what can work in their country. So, you know, they kind of started with that. And then as these countries present the strategy and kind of took it internally, presented it to, you know, various ministries of government or other stakeholders, we had two countries emerging to say, we want to actually take the leap to look at our policy, whether it's an edtech policy or you call it an ICT and education policy, want to look at creating a resilient education system. But not just that, but also this is not a government do it alone. I mentioned the ministerial forum in 2022 in Kigali, and one of the things we heard over and over is we need support. We need support from private sector. We need support from development partners. This is not something we will be able to do on our own. And we need this process a lot more open and doing it together, so that everyone can benefit out of this. So we saw Rwanda. One of the things that the Center of Innovative Teaching and Learning at Muscat Foundation had done back in 2022, an edtech landscape of the country. Where are the opportunities? Where are the gaps? Who are the key players? What is that North Star and how do we get to that North Star? We had a workshop following the landscape study and the report. And from there on, the idea was germinating that perhaps policy is something that we need to start looking into. So once they came through the Policy Academy, they raised their hands to say, we need support on developing a new edtech policy. Bob, I'm sure you'll talk about that process, but I think between then and now, it's been about a good 9 months. We've been actively involved, the World Bank, the Mascot Foundation, on supporting the Ministry of Education and stakeholders through an EdTech policy that will cover some of the areas we've been talking about today, but also making sure that all the industry players are working on it.
I think it's been interesting to kind of see how each of the countries have evolved their thinking together on EdTech policies, how they have been thinking about the different levels of these policies, from the policy itself to the strategy to implement the policy, to the action plan, which is much more detailed. I also think, just to reflect on two of the countries, how each of them kind of engaged with different aspects of the policy. And I'm thinking of Ethiopia, of some of the focus that they had on non-formal education and the large number of out-of-school youth in the system, the expansion of science, technology, and entrepreneurship, the importance of communities and community engagement, particularly as a lesson from COVID to engage parents in a much more holistic view of how to engage young people at the community level. The issues around resource mobilization and how we think about financing and very constrained budgets. And then, as you said, how to engage that broader ecosystem of partners. I'm wondering whether if you have any thoughts on kind of the Ethiopia process and how it's fitting in with some of the discussions you've had with your broader ecosystem of partners.
Yeah. So Ethiopia also raised their hand. They had started an ICT in education strategy, sort of planning, getting stakeholder input, etc. The World Bank colleagues and ourselves at the Center for Innovative Teaching and Learning at Mascot Foundation also kind of got involved in providing technical best known practices from all our evidence-driven input. Once the strategy was approved, Ethiopia then kind of started to build a policy out of it. This is an interesting case as well. A lot of times, countries start with a policy process and then develop a strategy. In Ethiopia, they decided to say, if we get a strategy right of how we want to implement this, we'll kind of write a policy that will allow us to implement this strategy. So both work. It depends on the country context. So then towards September, from about August last year, our teams started working and supporting the Ministry of Education in Ethiopia on developing the education policy. One of the things we ensured was evidence-driven data and technical knowledge on factors they need to consider. And then we're very happy to see that the policy opened up discussions. If you look at the size of Ethiopia, and if you look at the potential of EdTech innovations coming through, the Ethiopian government through that policy has kind of opened up that this is, you know, we will work with the private sector. Also in the policy process, they sought the input of other stakeholders, like even teachers, youth, whoever gets involved in the process of education. They actually listen to them to say, you know, this is where we are at, but this is where we want to go. What has been your experience? What are your overall kind of ambitions? And now we're happy to see that that policy paper has been approved. And this ties very well into one of the things we've started in Ethiopia, an EdTech fellowship, where we've selected a tech hub, and we're going to nurture EdTech companies with very, very innovative solutions in improving education and learning outcomes.
So, Siraj, this is really interesting. It's extremely challenging in many cases for the public sector and the private sector to collaborate and engage. They oftentimes come from different cultures, speak different languages, but it's incredibly essential that ministries of education and education systems are able to engage this broader ecosystem. What have you seen as the challenges and opportunities with your ecosystem partners to engage with ministries of education? And how has this policy process helped that dialogue?
Initially, the ministries of education didn't, have the kind of platform or, the audience of private sector to sort of understand who's doing what, or they were overwhelmed with so much around that they don't know, you know, what are those best practices and what is the impact of some of these solutions? That was one thing, that there wasn't a place where people could talk openly, discuss, demonstrate. And the other thing was that infrastructure has always been an issue. A lot of times, even from the private sector, were literally the solutions required, you know, very high level access to technology and internet. Even as the government improves infrastructure slowly by slowly to reach every corner of the country, we're now finding innovative solutions that break these sort of coming with very, very low threshold of technology barriers to let learners learn with technology. So these kind of new things that the government sort of looks at and say, okay, wow, this is working. A lot of times what would happen is that either the policy was ambiguous or actually just did not take into account that they can work with the private sector. If the companies would go maybe directly to a school, they'll be told that, yeah, we need guidance from the ministry to be able to work with you. So there was, things weren't moving smoothly. So what a policy does is, like we've seen in at least two countries, in Ethiopia and Rwanda, where the government actually is talking about in the policy that we need to now work with the private sector to see what they have and kind of develop or let that grow, than the governments themselves developing solutions in the edtech space. So those sort of things are ironing themselves out in creating a more enabling edtech ecosystem within these countries.
Yeah, no, these are three excellent points. I mean, we often find globally that ministries of education really don't have a clear sense of what are the innovations that are happening in their country. So this discovery process and the systems to identify who are the innovators and what are the new ideas that are being developed to solve some of these challenges with regard to access and quality. The second, as you say, is the infrastructure and finding appropriate solutions, and oftentimes kind of the offline or mixed mode solution is best. And then finally, defining very clearly the rules of the game and having that signal that it is important to engage with this broader ecosystem. I think what will be important as we kind of move from the policy to the action plan is the how-to of how these policies are implemented with regard to challenges that we see around procurement, of how do you procure solutions that might not be as well tested and might be coming from smaller organizations. The integration of new solutions into existing systems, looking at, for instance, the case of digital content being a mix of content, data, and algorithms in many cases now with AI. And then finally, the quality assurance and ultimately the training and the capacity of the teachers to be able to use and deliver these new solutions to youth in the classroom. I'd like to ask one final question, Siraj, to kind of bring us full circle from policy to ecosystem down to the youth themselves. Ultimately, how do you see the impact on youth skills, behaviors, attitudes as a result of these interventions, these policies, the introduction of more resilient models for education? And ultimately, how do you see youth being prepared for both skill development as well as employment as we reach 2030, 2040, and 2050, where a large majority of the world's population will be in Africa?
Bob, if you'll allow me a little bit of a longer response to this, because I want to paint a picture.
Yeah, absolutely.
First of all, take out the ability to do skills, etc. This time last year, I was in South Africa outside of Cape Town in quite a fairly under-resourced school, but that had mathematics and science lessons using a technology lab. And I wanted to be a fly on the wall because it's one thing to talk about these things, but how effective is learning with technology? And I wanted to see it, experience from a teacher if there's any challenges, and you know, talk to the young learners on what they see. So it was very, very interesting. They were doing a mathematics lesson, and then I got to talk to the teacher. And I said, research still hasn't found that glue, the technology actually helping improve learning outcomes. And the teacher said, look, I've been in the teaching business for 30 years. I was in the previous regime of South Africa. We had to change curriculum. We had to change our way of learning. And now I'm actually adopting technology to learn. Why? He says, if you take away learning with devices, and if you take the internet and technology away from these young kids, and I think there were 10-year-old children, even in this neighborhood, as soon as they step out of the school, there's technology surrounding them. People around them, at least with phones, they go home, there's some sort of technology being used. If you remove technology from learning today, we're simply not going to interest these kids in learning. The time has changed for us to sort of bring in that mode that interests the kids. So that is one thing to say, the world has moved on with everything in our lives using technology. So even learning has to be with technology. Now, if you implement the right way of learning, you know, give the children some freedom to review what they're learning in school vis-a-vis what they can actually look up the internet or, you know, kind of do a lot of their own research and come back into the classroom more prepared. If they are able to chart their own talents to what they want to learn, and then the job markets are changing ever so rapidly now than they were before. What are those changes and what kind of skills are required and how do we kind of drill those down back to the education systems? The fastest way to do that is with technology. And so coming back to a policy point of view as well, as long as a policy is fairly flexible to be changed, because changing a policy takes a very long time. And it takes a lot of stakeholder input, etc. You know, because education needs to be a lot more on its toes now than it used to before, if the policy is a lot more flexible towards changes, then we'll have education keeping up or even stepping a step higher for creating young learners with those skills needed for jobs of today and tomorrow.
No, those are excellent points. I think what we are quickly realizing is change is the constant, and change is happening ever more quickly. I also think that you know the old adage that education technology and learning with technology is happening everywhere but the classroom is an excellent point and true. That students are engaging with technology in their everyday life. And the opportunity is to leverage that technology to foster lifelong learners. Learning doesn't stop when you leave the classroom or even when you leave school. And I think some of the lessons from COVID and that what we're seeing is that these skills around agency, around being able to have some idea of purpose, of being able to be a self-starter, I think are all extremely important for using technology for learning, but also using technology for lifelong learning. Thanks, Siraj, for a fantastic conversation. I wonder if you can leave our listeners with one final call to action that you would like them to think about and take action in their daily lives.
Sure. I think whether you're a young person listening in or you're a parent or you're a teacher or you're an education stakeholder, that you know ranges from anything from a policymaker to educators, etc. Think of how do we want to shape our future, that human resource that we have in each of our countries, which is the youth, which is the learners. How do we want to shape our future? And what will it take to open up even if we start with the dialogue, sitting down frankly together, how often do government actually sit with young people and say, what is it that you're looking for? Rather than just telling them this is what it is. And how often is government demystifying themselves? Because a lot of times they are doing some amazing work, but again, it doesn't come out clearly. It's sort of blanketed in, you know, political miasma, etc. So open dialogues. Let's have a North Star as to each country. Where do you want to reach and how will we get there? And then seek support of partners like yourselves, the World Bank, ourselves, Muscat Foundation, other partners that we've used along the way. But make this into a more community-driven process and dialogue.
I love it. So we are the agents of our change and are the agents to change our future. That's a fantastic note to end on, Siraj. Thanks so much for the conversation, and we very much look forward to our continued collaboration and lots of exciting events and activities in the year to come.
Thank you. Cheers.